Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals for our late afternoon docket on this, which I believe is Pearl Harbor Day. Yes, December 7th, 1942. On my left is Justice Sue Walker, and on my right is Judge Lee Andolfino. We have two more oral cases to be submitted, and then we have three or four other non-oral cases that are being submitted today. So let's call the 3 o'clock criminal case at this time.
Court calls Christopher Kohler versus the state of Texas. If the court, Mr. Richard Glavin will argue for the appellant, and Ms. Catherine Mark will argue for the case.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. The court is presented today with, I think, two relatively simple issues, both of which are confined to the punishment phase of trial. The first issue deals with the state's exhibit number 25 that was admitted over objection during the punishment phase. The second issue is exhibit number 26, the state's exhibit number 26, which was also admitted over the defense counsel's objection during the punishment phase of trial. The third issue is a question of whether there was harm or sufficient harm to require a new trial on punishment, which we request in our brief. The objection made, I did not try this case in the trial court, but the objection was made to state's exhibit number 25 for the reason that it was 11 years old, and the trial court applied or superimposed what's known as the tacking doctrine, which is actually something that preexisted adoption of the Texas Rules of Evidence under Rule 609. Some courts had adopted it or have adopted it since then. I believe the Court of Appeals for the Second District has at least implicitly recognized the existence of a tacking doctrine under Rule 609 of the Texas Rules of Evidence. But it does not appear that any court has addressed the question of whether there is a similar tacking doctrine under Article 3707A1. The courts that have, there was a PDR that was granted in a case that I cited in my brief, actually was, and then dismissed as improvidently granted, I believe. But the question is the use of the word relevant to sentencing, all courts have recognized, including the Court of Criminal Appeals, that Article 3707A1 includes a threshold issue of relevancy. As with most of our rules of evidence, whether in the Code of Criminal Procedure or under the Texas Rules of Evidence, they are all, to some degree, sometimes more than less, modeled on counterpart rules or statutes in the federal system. The commentary to the counterpart to Rule 609 recognizes that the reason for a remoteness rule under Rules of Evidence is that once you get beyond 10 years, just as a question of fairness and relevance, you're dealing with a substantially diminished degree of probity that in all but very exceptional and rare circumstances would render such remote conduct or bad conduct by a defendant to be irrelevant, or that it's the risk of unfair prejudice would substantially outweigh the probity of that remote misconduct.
Why doesn't interim convictions make it relevant? I'm hearing you, but if there's one conviction hanging out there 11 years ago that is so far away with nothing to tie it to today or what happened
sure.
in this case,
sure.
it's just not relevant. You've got a pattern.
I think the common law purpose of making prior misconduct admissible, particularly during punishment, is that people that are convicted of felons are just supposed to be and are presumed to be inherently bad people or dishonest people. Of course, we know that if it's a felony not involving credibility, it's still going to be admissible if it's less than 10 years, generally speaking, just because of the inherent distrust or dislike or whatever of felons. If you start dealing with misdemeanor offenses, then obviously they would be treated to a less degree of the common law recognition that felons are all bad people or not to be trusted. But in this case, we're not really dealing with questions of credibility. We're dealing with questions of whether this person would or would not be suitable or a suitable candidate for probation. And I don't think that if somebody 11 years ago failed to stop and render identifying information a misdemeanor offense, that would in any way be relevant to their credibility. And I think because of the remoteness of it, under the general standard recognized in the commentary associated with Federal Rule 609, that it's just inherently unfair to be bringing up misdemeanors more than 11 years old. Now, your question is whether the intervening acts somehow resurrects things beyond 11 years. I don't think that that's, first of all, even if this court has ruled otherwise, I would respectfully submit that that's not a doctrine that survives the Texas Rules of Evidence. And number two, insofar as that general issue would be included implicitly in the application of Article 3707.1a is another question. And I just don't think that something that – I don't think there's a tacking doctrine under Article 3707 either, but there – and – but more importantly,
excuse me for interrupting, but if there's a relevance balancing, then you look at the circumstances. Has the person continued to commit offenses? So are we looking at a pattern? Was the person locked up in prison and this new offense occurred 2 days after they got out of prison for the thing they committed 12 years ago?
Sure. Sure. And
so isn't that what we look at in relevance?
Well, under the Rule 609, which actually has the time limitations, the 10-year limitation presumption, I would say, against admissibility, the rule would not consider something to be remote unless the person had discharged and was no longer subject to punishment or parole or probation. For that prior remote offense, is that the time does not start running until once they've discharged probation or whatever punishment they've received. And the question really is, and I think probably the trial court's error really is that it skipped over the question of relevance and went directly to this tacking doctrine idea, which, insofar as I can tell, has not been recognized under Article 3707. Insofar as the question of relevance goes. And I think the trial court erred by not initially making a determination of just relevance. Now, we do know that convicted felons, it's not so much a question of relevance, it's just a generalized stigma attached to people who have felony convictions of less than 10 years. You would, but that was not alleged in this case, I don't believe, insofar as that prior failure to stop and render information.
But I'm saying tacking doesn't apply if it's a prior felony used for enhancement.
No.
Or a prior DWI, right?
No.
Unless it wasn't a final.
No, but in connection with that, obviously, if someone stipulated, then you'd get into the old chief kind of question where even prior convictions that are alleged, for example, a third DWI that's been enhanced, under our rules, generally speaking, I know there's some exceptions, the enhancement is not permitted to be read during the guilt phase because it no longer has sufficient, the probative value of that is no longer, it is actually outweighed by the unfair prejudice or the risk thereof. And so you do have to, first of all, the trial court didn't make a relevance determination. He just superimposed from Rule 609 into 3707.1a this tacking doctrine rule. I don't think it survives either the rules of evidence, Texas Rules of Evidence, when they were adopted, and I don't think it's included as a matter of statutory interpretation under Article 3707.1a.
Well, let's just suppose that he was wrong. We can determine that it was relevant, correct?
That would be a question of harm. And that would get into the question of whether or not.
Why would it be a question of harm?
Well, because if it's an error.
If we can decide that it's relevant or not. If we decide it's not relevant, well, okay, now we get to a question of harm. If we decide that it is relevant.
Well,
it kind of sounds like what you're saying is 10 years is. We're not even talking about years. It could be 3 years, and it might not be relevant.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
So that's all you're saying is it's not relevant under 3707, and the trial judge didn't consider relevancy.
And so
it sounds like to me what we then have to do is decide relevancy. If it is relevant, nope. If it is not relevant, then we go to then we go to harm.
I think probably because relevance would be a legal question and not a factual determination for a jury to decide, I'm not sure that there would be any principle basis for prohibiting you from doing that per se. I think institutionally speaking, I don't think it would be appropriate for you to do so. I think it would be appropriate for it to go back to the trial court and my client to get a fair trial on punishment. Because I think that we can't speculate on how things might have been different if the court from the get-go, as basically these decisions are supposed to be appropriately made by a trial court, not disregarded or errors be committed, and then this court substitute for a trial court's decision.
It seems to me that the relatively minor, as you pointed out, offense we're talking about doesn't work in your favor on harm.
Well, I think it does because in closing argument with the state hammering on it about this history of 11-year or 12-year long history of criminal, but it's glossed over kind of this thing. If it hadn't been admitted, because it wasn't really, it was certainly more unfairly prejudicial than probative.
How long would it have been without this one?
I'm sorry?
How long would the history have been without this one?
I think about 5 years.
Okay.
And the state would not have been arguing and repeatedly arguing and emphasizing the existence of an 11-year-old misdemeanor, although they don't refer to it as a misdemeanor, unless they thought they were getting some value out of it. And I think that's really true with most closing arguments, is prosecutors generally hit on things that they think are going to prejudice a defendant the most. Otherwise, they wouldn't be mentioning it.
What is this offense, failure to provide identifying documents?
Well, it's if you get in a traffic offender bender and you don't leave your name, if you look around and the parked car doesn't have an owner present and you wait or whatever,
traffic
and then
ticket.
Yeah, it's basically, I think it may have been Class B. It depends on, I think there may be a question of how much damage is done to the vehicle.
Okay.
But it's, and obviously they had means of determining who it was, but that did not satisfy, criminally speaking, his obligation to leave identifying information after the scene of an accident.
Okay.
And so it's.
I knew failure to identify had been declared unconstitutional.
Well, I've got some personal experience with that, and it has not been. Actually, the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that it is not unconstitutional. Brown.
Was failure truthfully to identify that it was held to be okay?
No. Brown versus Texas ruled that 3802 was unconstitutional because it had not been preceded by reasonable suspicion for the stop.
Right.
Our Texas statute now, it was amended, I believe, one session ago, where now even failing to give your name, address, and date of birth based upon reasonable suspicion or a stop supported by reasonable suspicion, whether you know it or not, is a valid penal offense. And then, of course, after lawful arrest, had separately been found to be constitutional as well.
So, by Fifth Amendment.
Well, yeah, actually, there's one U.S. Supreme Court case that says the Fifth Amendment does not violate it unless the evidence is admitted into trial. So they can just beat you until you confess, so long as they don't offer it and have it admitted into court. But that's the federal constitution. Fortunately, we do still have some protections, I think, under our state constitution in that area. I see my lights on. The second issue, I'll just briefly say, I think it speaks for itself in the brief. It's the admission of, it's a question of linkage under Fowler. I do think it speaks for itself. We think there was error committed on that, and that cumulatively and separately, these two errors entitle or require the court to reverse and grant my client a new trial and punishment. Thank you.
Anybody sign the certification? Or is the certification just a stamp, or is it a seal?
It's a computer printout, and I think there's a cover letter. That comes in the front, and it's kind of a generic thing saying, in lieu of the case file, which we no longer have, and that is in the appendix.
But the certification where it says true and correct copy, original file, Dallas County Clerk's Office, is that signed by anybody?
It's signed by somebody over a line that says Deputy Clerk, Dallas County Clerk. And then after that, you do have a stamp saying true and correct copy of original file. In Dallas County Clerk's office, but of course it's kind of inconsistent because they say they don't have the case file, so it's not really a copy of an original, it's a copy of a computer printout, which is not the original. Thank you.
May it please the court. The state contends that because Exhibit 25 was offered at punishment and not for impeachment purposes, that 3707 controls the remoteness objection. And the case law dictates that evidence offered under 3707 isn't subject to Rule 609's remoteness limitations.
When the trial judge apparently articulates an inaccurate reason.
I agree, Your Honor, but under Romero, I believe that the evidence, as long as it was accepted under any theory that's correct, that it's fine, we're fine there. As far as states, I'm sorry?
I just said that's what I assumed.
Okay. Under States Exhibit 26, it does show an offense. It shows that appellate received probation for a 2005 DWI. It was certified on the back and signed. You know, the seal is on one page. May I hand you a copy of this, or do you have a copy?
I have a copy, but I can't tell if it's a seal or a stamp.
Mine's a copy, too.
Okay.
Sorry. Okay, and it was linked to appellate through identifiers in the other exhibits that were admitted to trial without objection. 21 through 24 are all certified documents that identify Christopher Carl Kohler. 21 and 24 identify him as a white male with a birth date of 2/11/79. 21 and 24 show the same Texas state ID number. And then alternatively...
Is that sin?
I'm sorry?
Is that sin?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. Alternatively, he wasn't harmed by the admission of the exhibits. In addition to those, the jury heard about three different drug offenses, one of them which was approximately 10 years old, or I think they all were, as a matter of fact. They were 2000, and this case was 2010.
So let me ask you the question. How long would they have been arguing if he had a criminal history except for these two?
To me, it appears since 2000, and the case was, so 10 years.
So we're talking about, from your perspective, 10 years instead of 11 years.
Or 12 years.
Or 12 years.
Yes, Your Honor.
And
I disagree. I think the prosecutors didn't stress the complaint of offenses during closing argument. They did mention that it had been going on since this date. But in fact, during closing arguments, defense counsel told the jurors that it was a fact that appellant had two prior DWIs to which he pled guilty.
Okay, that means so your position is he had from harmful or harmless error that we had 10 years that included drug offenses versus 12 years that also included two DWIs. So the jury is sitting there probably worried about the drug offenses as serious, not the additional.
I think the state stressed the drug offenses. And actually, State's Exhibit 25, the first one, the older one, is the traffic offense, transportation code. Then we have 26, which is the second one he's complaining about, which is an 05 Dallas DWI. And I believe he got probation for that. Then also admitted were State's Exhibit 21, which was a pen packet from the Federal Bureau of Prisons of a 2000 offense for conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute and distribution. State's Exhibits 22 and 23 were two 2000 Denton offenses for possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver. And then State's Exhibit 24 was yet another DWI that he received in 2008.
Those drug offenses were all in 2000?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. And unless there are any questions, I'll conclude.
There's a case that says computer printouts aren't official documents. What makes this an official document that's admissible without a sponsored witness?
Your Honor, Flowers, they looked at a similar computer printout. And the court made the point of saying that one way to prove up a prior is through documentary proof that contains sufficient information to establish both the existence of a prior conviction and the defendant's identity as a person convicted. And they were referring to the printout in Flowers.
Okay.
And it was a similar printout. It was Dallas County.
Without a sponsoring witness, just a computer printout.
I don't believe it if it had the sponsoring witness, Your Honor. I don't remember.
I'm just trying to figure out the vehicle for getting in a document that's not an official document without either an affidavit or a sponsoring witness.
Well, was there an objection?
I'm sorry? But was there an objection to this?
You're talking about the two exhibits that we're talking about here.
Yeah, 26. I'm talking about 26.
Right. There obviously was an objection.
Right. There was an objection to 26.
Was the basis of the objection that it's not authenticated, there's not a sponsoring witness, or was the objection...
The objection, as I recall it, it was more that it was not tied to the defendant.
Right. So what I'm saying is there's multiple objections. You have to make the right objection. Now we're talking about... Was this authenticated? Was there a sponsoring witness?
Do we and on appeal, it's more, was it tied?
And now we've changed,
yes, Your Honor.
We've changed our complaint to the substance of it, not the procedural aspect of it, isn't tied to these priors.
Okay. Yes, Your Honor, you're correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
I've got just a few things in rebuttal. From my reading of the record, the Exhibit number 26 was represented by the state as being a certified copy. I think it's the documents speak for themselves as to whether they were certified by anyone under oath or otherwise.
But don't you have to?
Well, okay, if we're dealing...
Right.
We may be dealing, if you're talking about waiver, we may still be talking about whether there's egregious error in a trial court looking at a document, having someone say, "Judge, that's certified," and the judge still allowing it into evidence under those circumstances. I know that certainly errors can be waived, but depending on the magnitude of the error or the egregious nature of the error, we may be talking about an error that, although waived, would still be preserved under some circumstances for appellate review. The issue that we had with the as I say, we don't know whether the document in Flowers was identical to this one. There's no part of the Flowers record that's in this court's record. I've never seen what exactly. Apparently, it was some kind of computer printout, and I'm not certain, but I believe that there may have been someone who actually sponsored that, whether it was someone from the Dallas County Clerk's Office or someone that was a custodian of records that had gone and received it and could testify as it having come from the Dallas County Clerk's Office. I think we're probably going to see a lot of these cases because Dallas County apparently destroys their records almost immediately. And while they will issue documents purporting to state that these are copies of originals in the Dallas County's files, they're not really the originals. They're computer-generated reiterations of original judgments. And I don't know whether they're doing it for economic reasons or otherwise, but I think defendants are entitled to be confronted with real judgments, not electronic data printouts that are not certified by anybody. So we would request that the court grant the relief we seek in our appeal and our brief. And if there's no further questions, I will let you guys move on so you can get out of here today.
All right. Thank you. Your case is submitted.